You are tuned in to another edition of Americana Music Profiles, brought to you by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine and AmericanaMusicMagazine.com. I'm your host, Greg Tutwiler. Let's jump right in to the next exciting interview. Los Gatos is an Americana band from Boston, Massachusetts. They often refer to themselves as an off-kilter and infectious concoction of folk, roots, rock, country, blues, Cajun, New Orleans jazz, Latin grooves, and more. They are my guests on this next edition of Americana Music Profiles as we dig down in that soup and find out what's behind all of that cool music. So hey guys, welcome to the podcast. I'm talking with a couple of members of the band Los Gatos. Did I get that right?
Yeah, Los Gatos.
Okay. So I got to ask, tell me where the name came from.
Well, you know, it's always hard to come up with a name, right? Everybody has different things they pull in. And we had this story about someone that got the gout, and I thought, well, that's an interesting name for a band.
Okay.
And we used it for a few years, I think, as the gout. But then some of our first initial gigs were at my kids' elementary school fundraising events. And I don't know if I want to see posters of the gout in the hallways where my children are
right
on their way to class. This wasn't quite the message our family wanted to get across to the community. So we spanglicized it in a way to try to obscure that reference.
Okay.
But stay true to the original intent, so to speak.
So it does kind of lend itself to that ethnic sound, the Mexican ethnic sound of the word, or potentially the Texas Arcana sound, but you guys are really more of an Americana flavored band, not really that kind of Tex Arcana sound at all, right?
Well, I think it varies. There is, you know, we do love some bands that, you know, have that sort of influence. You know, we're big fans of Los Lobos and the Mavericks, and
sure, okay.
And some of our songs actually do have a bit of a Latin tinge. You know, Mike's got a song called "Steal It, Pawn It, Buy Another," which definitely has a Latin vibe. It's got Spanish lyrics in it even. I've got a song called "Tequila Set the House on Fire," which also has kind of a Latin vibe. And those are actually the first two songs on the album. After that, it starts to vary a little bit. We have quite a few different influences, so it's certainly not limited to that.
Sure. Okay. So let me back up just a bit and tell me how you guys actually got together originally as a band.
Well, I guess that started probably around 2006. It was basically Chris Gleason, and Mike Eigen. We became friends after hanging out with another friend of ours, and it was kind of an odd combo at first. I was playing guitar and mandolin, and Mike was mostly playing clarinet. And we would just hang out at my house till all hours of the night and morning, covering songs and writing songs, and did that for a number of years. And then eventually Paul, who's sitting here, who was a friend of Mike's, started joining us. And then my brother-in-law, Seamus, started coming over. And it was mostly just jam sessions. And Paul's coworker, Bruce, joined us. And, you know, after doing that for a little while, we decided to take it out into the public, so to speak.
Right.
Middle school fundraisers. But even in the beginning of the band, not much longer after Chris and I just started, because the main thing about the band I think is important to take away is it's all original music. There's four original songwriters.
Okay.
And even back in very early days, Chris and I were both writing original songs, and that was the real fire, I think, that got people interested and propelled the band forward.
Yeah, because it's a lot of storytelling going on. That's
Yeah. I read down the website where you guys kind of described yourself as a, I'm going to read the quote here, off-kilter and infectious concoction of folk, roots, rock, country blues, Cajun, New Orleans, Latin grooves, and more. How do you combine all of those flavors together and cohesively? Because I love the sound, but I mean, there's a lot going on there in that soup.
Yeah, Yeah. Well, I think a lot of that has to do with the four singer-songwriters. And, you know, there's a quote from Music Connection magazine when they were writing about our live album that we think fits pretty well. They called us a veritable Grand Ole Opry with a modern sense of humor.
Yeah.
And we kind of like that description because we are a bit of a circus. You know, we on stage, you know, we've got it fairly streamlined. We don't take too long between songs, but we switch singer-songwriter every couple of songs and even switch around instruments. And so each songwriter, we have a lot of shared influences, but I would also say that, you know, like I'm maybe a little bit more influenced by, you know, bluegrass and the kind of folk roots, but also bands like Wilco in their even current incarnation. Paul's a little bit more into kind of 50s rock and roll in New Orleans. You know, Mike's got his influences, which I'll let him describe.
Jamaya, Brazilian pop.
So,
psychedelic, you know, Brazilian pop.
I wouldn't say that all those influences come together in every song, but certainly across the album, you can hear an awful lot of them.
And I think I read where you guys actually have even added horns to that too, right?
Yes.
That was a really, something that I think we all wanted. You could hear it. If we had other people come in that were, one other person, but it was a disaster. But it's something that we wanted, and it's slowly but surely. But Mike, tell the story, because I think Eddie coming in is the most brilliant story.
Well, the horn section is known as the Continental Horns.
Okay.
First of all, it's comprised of Eddie Barrett on trumpet and Emily Grogan, who's also one of the songwriters, on saxophone. And Eddie and I got to know each other, oddly enough, when I was refi-ing my house.
Hmm.
And he was my mortgage broker, and he was going through the pictures of the house that, you know, the assessment of the worth of the house, and he started naming all these instruments that he saw in my basement where we rehearsed, and specifics about pickups, and you could just tell he was a musician. And then it also turned out he lived 5 minutes away from me.
Oh, cool.
So I said, you know, why don't you drop by and, you know, and jam, you know, some night. And he did. He fit right in. Great guy, great horn player. And it's just, you know, but again, there's been a certain quality of serendipity about this band, because a lot of us are old friends, and Eddie just sort of fit right in, and it was one of those serendipitous moments. So
right, and then Emily sort of fell in too, because she was teaching piano to my daughter, so I used to see her all the time, dropping off my daughter, picking her up, and then she stumbled into the Burren one time. Saw us finally play, and then I was like, oh, we got to go see you play. And then where we went to go see her play, she was playing saxophone. I was like, oh, God, yeah. You got to join.
Yeah. Because to clarify that reference, we have a weekly residency at the Burren, which is an Irish bar and music club.
Oh, okay.
In
cool.
Somerville, Massachusetts. And so we play there every Sunday. And Emily came, sat in a couple times, and then basically never left. I mean, it's been over a year now, and she's been to pretty much every show, and she's great in the horn section, but she's also an amazing singer-songwriter in her own right, so before long, we were like, well, heck, you should be singing some songs, too.
Yeah. So you mentioned earlier, you know, that the band is based on original music, so when you bring two horns into the mix, do you have to rewrite your arrangements? How does that fit in? Does it change a bit how the song gets played on stage?
Yeah, that's a good question. I know, you know, initially I was pretty adamant that I didn't want horns on certain songs, partly because, you know, like, I don't know, a song like Moscow Mule on the album is a little bit more, has a more of a bluegrassy vibe and fiddle and stuff like that. And I didn't necessarily want to muddy the waters with that.
Mm-hmm.
So they also will do some like hand percussion and stuff like that if
okay.
the horns aren't needed on a song. But they do fit on an awful lot of the songs. And increasingly, because they've now been playing with us live, we do a lot of gigs. We've graduated from the elementary school fundraisers, and now we're playing, you know, 100 shows a year or whatever. They've just become so organic that they can pretty much now, you know, jump into any song and make it work.
Yeah, okay.
If necessary, we've just kind of developed our sound.
I think in the beginning, like, I charted out one of our tunes. Like, I had an idea in mind already. I mean, I play accordion in the band, so mm-hmm. sort of that can lend itself to the horns quite
sure,
well.
Yeah.
So I had some visions, but one of the things, as Chris pointed out, I mean, having our weekly residency is such a great opportunity for them to come in and hone in and,
sure, yeah,
and to feel the vibe, because that's really what's most important.
Where do you find that your music as a whole fits with what kind of audience? Where do you find yourself, or the what kind of audience do you find your music appealing to the greatest?
Well, elementary fundraisers do not work.
Outside of the elementary school audience.
That is a definite no.
Yeah, there's some visuals. Like, you'd really have to see Mike perform to understand what we're talking about. But one thing that's been great, I think, is that we find, like, you know, there's not, like, an age bracket. Like, we find it's across the spectrum, and that's great. You know, there's times at the Burren that when people come in, you never know, and they don't know who we are necessarily,
sure,
but
yeah,
they're dancing. Yeah, and you know, it's funny because I think we've gravitated towards the term Americana because it is this umbrella term that
right,
allows for lots of different roots music influences, but also allows for rock and, you know, other instrumentation. But it's tricky because some people kind of have a sense of what Americana is, and other people need that defined for them. But one thing that a lot of people just seem to say about us is that we're fun, which isn't really a genre,
right,
I guess. but it's definitely sort of a lively band, and there's so much going on with the instrument switching and different singers that I think a lot of times, at least live, it matters less to people what genre of music we're performing, and it's more just about having fun and engaging with the band.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think we mentioned it when we started, but you guys are from the Boston area. Do you how far south and west do you travel? Are you a more regional band, or do you get a pretty good travel range?
Yeah,
we don't go past Marlboro.
Yeah, we're definitely regional. You know, we're at present, especially with the new album and so forth, we're looking into doing a little bit wider regional performing in, you know, in the Northeast, but we don't really have the schedule flexibility or the budget to go too far outside of the Northeast, except for maybe with certain exceptions if something came up. But
well, I like to be optimistic about it because if someone's going to offer you an opportunity, I don't know if you're going
to
count, you know.
Yeah.
So
we have a large fan base in Brazil.
Yeah. So I'm guessing some or all of you have other things that you do outside of this particular project.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone.
Yeah, a lot of us have kids. All of us have pretty serious daytime jobs. So there's a lot of us are juggling different aspects of our lives to make this work.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
But we do manage to play on average
every week.
You know, well, always every week, and sometimes two or three times a week. And off until 3 a.m. So we're definitely not afraid to get out there.
Yeah.
I guess you could say we're doing it for the right reasons. We're doing it because we just enjoy playing, we enjoy writing, and we enjoy that thing that Chris said about people, you know, having fun. Love to be able to be a part of that and make it fun.
So I'm guessing then that there isn't very little cover, if any, cover music performed with the band. So when you guys are writing your songs, is it a collective project, or do each one of you bring songs to the group and said, let's try these, and it's kind of more of an individual process?
It's been mostly individual songwriting and arranging, and then bringing it to the band and having people bring what they can to the table, certainly instrumentally. We've had a few co-writes. Paul and I co-wrote a song. Mike and Paul co-wrote a song. I've co-written some songs with my friend Lucy Martinez, who I have another band with, Theta Domestics. But haven't done a ton of collaborative songwriting from scratch up to this point.
There's always been enough song. I mean, we went in to record this album. We actually tracked 30-something songs before we went down to the 13th. So there's no shortage of material, which is, I guess, a good thing. And there's always more things funneling in.
Yeah. Tell me about the new record.
Well, again, it's 13 original songs.
Emily Grogan, since she got involved in the album process a little bit later, we only have one of her songs on the album, but she's got a bunch of other songs that she performed with us live. So other than Emily's song on the album, Mike and Paul and I each contributed an equal number of songs. And
the album's called Mighty, which is named after Paul's dog. Mighty's on the cover,
right?
And he's on the cover.
I would tell you that as far as the concept of the album, or at least the way we picked the songs, the one thing that I could say is that it's just a moving force from beginning to end. We uh-huh. didn't really slow it down. It just sort of had this this movement that we all really liked. And that was one of the benefits of having so many songs to pick from.
Which is like our live shows. There's that same kind of movement, energy, and spirit in our live shows. And we're trying to encapsulate that in a set of music on record.
When you guys are performing live, do you have a preset set list, or do you keep that organic as well?
It depends. Sometimes for a really important gig that we know there's like really a set time constraint, we'll have the set list. But increasingly, we're able to just kind of call out songs as we go.
Yeah.
There are certain songs that we typically play, at every show, and lately we've been kind of doing the album in order,
okay.
and then playing other songs. But we're pretty flexible that way. Again, the band, we've played these songs so many times at this point, it's pretty easy to call out. The only real issue would be just whether it requires, major instrument switching.
Well, we've been getting really good at that. We're kind of like firemen when it comes to that. I got to switch from accordion to guitar. Oh, no, wait a minute. No, we're not going to do that. Oh, shit, I got to put the accordion back.
Oh, no, yeah. The really funny thing is that Bruce Bartone, who plays guitar and bass, lead guitar and bass, and Seamus Feeney, who plays acoustic guitar and resonator guitar and bass, and Bo Ron, Irish frame drum, sometimes somebody can't make a gig or whatever, so we've all learned to kind of fill in. But, sometimes we'll be playing a song and, they're switching between bass and guitar. Sometimes they forget who plays what instrument on the song.
Yeah.
We were doing our release party recently and realized halfway through the song that they were not on the instrument they were supposed to be on. But it didn't matter. They both know how to play the song on both. And somehow
yeah.
it seems to always happen on my song.
Yeah. Or there's always that moment where we'd be playing the song and realize, hey, there's no bottom end. There's nobody on bass. Who's on bass?
But the good thing is I'm the only one that plays mandolin, so that never gets confused.
Well, it sounds like you guys definitely have learned how to have fun with all of that, rather than having being so serious that you have to criticize and stop and start over and those types of things, where it adds, I'm sure, to the enjoyment for the audience as well.
I think you're absolutely
right
about
that. Yeah. And we don't mean to suggest that we're not serious about the music. We're very serious about the music.
Oh, sure.
But we try not to shake ourselves too seriously.
Yeah, right. So
That'll be obvious.
How far ahead do you plan? What's the future? What would you guys like to see happen with the band? Do you think that far ahead, or do you have plans?
We've been thinking about it. Yeah, I think. First of all, now that we've finally sort of figured out how we want to approach the studio, because that was an interesting process. We tried lots of different approaches to recording, but we've got a home studio and we've worked with some outside studios as well. So I think the next studio album will go much more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So we're definitely going to do some more recording. But it is our goal to try to expand both our fan base and our reach in the coming year. As we said, we're mostly regional, but we would like to start expanding a little further out.
Cool.
Yeah, we have
playing for more people.
We have a plan to headline Newport Boat Festival. We haven't had a talk with them yet about that, but 2050 is what we're shooting for.
Yeah, okay. So, if people who want to get a copy of the new CD, how can they do that? If they want to remind us again, for folks that are kind of more in your area, where can they catch you weekly, and maybe where could they find you in the spring? What kind of festival events do you have scheduled, if any?
Sure. Well, first of all, our website has a lot of great resources. It's losgautos.com. That's G-O-U-T-O-S. And You can buy the album, digital download there. You can order hard copies of the CD, you know, through CD Baby or Amazon. Mm-hmm. You know, we're on Spotify and iTunes and all those digital outlets. We're talking about doing a vinyl release. That's hasn't happened yet, but we really would like to do a vinyl release. We're hoping maybe in the spring or summer. And as far as shows,
every Sunday at the Burn.
Yeah, every Sunday at the Burn in the front room there in Davis Square in Somerville, which for people who aren't from the area is right next to Cambridge, Mass.
Okay.
And then we also play pretty frequently at a lot of other local venues in town. We've played Toad quite a bit and Lizard Lounge and Sally O'Brien's and a bunch of other places. So a lot of all the kind of local Boston clubs. And we're still working on the spring and summer schedule, but we're definitely hoping to branch out to some festivals and other things coming up. So people can check the website for our shows page and see where we're playing in 2019.
Irons are in the fire.
Yeah.
Right. Cool. Well, good. Well, thanks, guys. This has been fun, and appreciate getting the chance to learn about your music, and I wish you the best with it.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Americana Music Profiles. Find us on iTunes at Americana Music Profiles and on the internet at AmericanaRhythm.com.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune in to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.